The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots to get to, as always, on today's program. And rather than tell you what's coming up later on in the show, I'll just wait because I've got quite a few notes here, and I'm not exactly sure what I'll get to later on in the show. So let's just start. China is openly discussing its advanced stealth military technology, a breakthrough that Newsweek says could propel the nation's military to the level of America and Russia just over the next decade or so. A Chinese communist news agency on Tuesday, this was just the other day, reported that the Chinese Air Force had successfully tested radar cross-section technology. There's an article, Richard tells me, that was going up just today. It might be up there already, on China's military and how it's taking such a giant step forward. And some of the key points brought out in this Trumpet article. First, China's first ever homemade aircraft carrier. It set sail just last week, and evidently it's going to be ready sometime next year for the Chinese Navy. And the PLA, that's the People's Liberation Army, it's aiming to have four aircraft carrier groups by 2030. So that's just 12 years off. 12 years off, they're planning to produce three more destroyers per year up until that time. And in this article, there's a short quote from this testimony on May 17th. I guess this would have just been a week ago. We grabbed the audio for it. But this is James Fennell. He's the former Navy intelligence officer, or a former Navy intelligence officer, and he testified here or had an opening statement before the House Committee on Intelligence just last week. And here's a little snippet on what he had to say about just the growing power of the Chinese Navy as it compares to the United States. Clip one.
Finally, it must be noted that the future size of the PLA Navy will be about 550 warships and submarines by 2030. That's twice the size of today's U.S. Navy. As such, it's clear the U.S. Navy is at great risk. We simply are not adequately sized or outfitted to meet our national security commitments in the Indo-Asia-Pacific, let alone around the globe. To accomplish all of the above missions, to provide a credible deterrence against PRC hegemony, and to be able to fight and win wars at sea, the U.S. Navy must get bigger, certainly more than 355 ships. Without that, expect China to push us even further from Asia. Expect to lose more allies and influence across the region. Anticipate being globally irrelevant as Beijing destabilizes and erodes democracy, and with it the national security and values the United States and our allies promote. We have already slipped. If we fall much farther, we won't be able to get up.
That's some testimony there from James Fennell. Just last week, in front of the House of Representatives, or the House Committee anyway, talking about the size of the Chinese Navy, doubling the U.S. in just 12 years. I mean, you can see why they're already expanding the way that they are into the South China Sea. The article that we're posting today, I mean, it's not just the Navy that it discusses. The growing air power and, of course, the advances China's making in space technology. We've had a lot of articles over the years. Of course, we have booklets on Russia and China and prophecy as well. But you might just check out at thetrumpet.com, The Rise of China as a Superpower. I mean, there's a section in our booklet, Russia and China in Prophecy, about this emerging superpower. There's plenty of articles, though, that you can run through at thetrumpet.com, including the one that we're posting just today, and that one has some important links at the end of the the piece. So be sure to look for that today at thetrumpet.com. Switching gears over here to the Middle East now. The New York Times came out with a big reveal yesterday about Iran. Surprise, surprise. Iran is working on this covert long-range missile program. And it dates back to 2011, the early years of the Barack Obama presidency, in other words. This would have been 4 years before Barack Obama and John Kerry finalized the nuclear deal with Iran and opened the way, basically, for the mullahs to get hold of hundreds of billions of dollars if they just hit the pause button for a few years on nuclear bombs, on developing a nuclear bomb. If they just hit the pause button, that's what the deal was, basically. Then we'll give you hundreds of billions of dollars. We'll welcome you right back into the international community. And here we find out from the New York Times yesterday about this secret covert operation going on in the deserts of Iran. ICBMs. These are not defensive weapons. Of course, you remember the reps for Iran saying, well, we were never even developing nuclear weapons. And here now we're seeing pictures. There's quite a few in the New York Times article. Big revelation. And coming from the New York Times of all publications. Now, they make sure to point out at the early part of the article, such a program, this ICBM program, long-range missile technology, ballistic missiles, such a program would not violate the international deal intended to prevent Iran from developing a nuclear weapon or any other formal agreement. So it doesn't violate Obama's nuclear deal. And of course, the reason it doesn't is because Obama made sure the deal was in no way linked to Iran's ICBM development, because he knew what was going on and he knew they wouldn't stop it. They didn't stop any of that. And we know they didn't stop with their state sponsorship of terrorism and killing American troops and kidnapping and torturing American citizens. It says, though, here's the New York Times trying to say it doesn't violate the deal, but this is still a dangerous development. They're trying to walk that fine line. Still, if completed, it could threaten Europe and potentially the United States. And if Iran is found to be conducting long-range missile work, that would increase tensions between Tehran and the U.S. So this article talks about these experts that are analyzing the data, looking at the pictures, the satellite photos, saying that it looks like, to them, they're developing long-range missile technology. So here they are building these long-range ICBMs. And as President Trump pointed out when he terminated the nuclear deal the other day, or a couple weeks ago, they've been bombing American embassies, Iranian forces have. They've bombed military installations, American or U.S. military installations. They've murdered hundreds, thousands of American service members. And then the kidnappings, the imprisonments, the torturing. Here we come to the end of this. I should have gotten the word count. It was a long piece. And here's what you find at the very end of the article. The tail end, the liberal spin, the attack President Trump mode. It says, work at the facility is most likely intended as a hedge should the nuclear agreement collapse, said one Iran expert. The country does not appear to be sprinting toward a long-range missile, but preparing the ground, you see. Preparing the ground in case Iranian leaders should one day deem that necessary. You see, President Obama came in and made peace with them, and they stopped everything. Or they were just sort of preparing. If they were doing something, they were just preparing the ground in case someone came in who terminated the nuclear deal. This other expert they quote, Mr. Lewis, concluded that the program is holding deliberately short of a functional long-range missile, but if President Trump succeeds in tearing up the agreement, or if Tehran feels threatened, Mr. Lewis warned, Shahrood, that's the name of the covert site, Shahrood suggests that Iran could acquire a long-range missile more quickly than has been previously known. So President Trump better be careful here. Here's this ICBM site. It's been in operation since 2011, since President Obama came into office early on in his presidency. And of course, so predictable, it's President Trump who's making all the wrong decisions here. As I say, ICBMs, they're not defensive weapons. These are offensive weapons. And hot air in writing about the disastrous nuclear deal, it said yesterday, this is just another reminder that we cut a deal with a terrorist state that didn't do anything to restrict its terrorist or its ability to develop platforms for later use against us to restrict its terrorism. It says, if anything, the JCPOA provided financial support for these efforts and others in the region, fueling conflict and pushing Iranian hegemony all the way to the Mediterranean, all without getting anything in return other than a piece of paper. We didn't even get American detainees out of Iran. It's a complete debacle, only becoming even more apparent with the passage of time. President Trump terminates the deal a few weeks ago, and then here comes the big revelation from the New York Times. As they try to walk that fine line of saying, you know, this is really dangerous. We didn't realize this was going on. This could threaten Europe. This could threaten the United States. But oh, by the way, everything was, it was under control until President Trump terminated the nuclear deal. A couple days ago, the new Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, he had this, this pretty amazing exchange with a reporter. The reporter basically saying, look, you're demands on Iran. They're too strict. They're too hard. I mean, this is going to hurt the prospects for negotiating some kind of new deal. Here's how that exchange went. Clip two.
The demands, or whatever you want to call them, that you laid out for Iran yesterday, it seems like there's, partially because you've laid them all out and partially because of what they are, there's not going to be much room for negotiation, if any, on any of those. Would you agree with that? And because of the way that was put out there, what makes you think that Iran is going to be willing to work with the U.S. on this? If it's sanctions, wouldn't that take a very long time at this point?
I don't know which of those demands. Should we allow them to be terrorists? Is that one we should compromise on?
Should we?
How many missiles are they allowed to fire? I mean, I'm
right.
The answer is the benchmark I set forward yesterday is a very low standard. It's the standard behavior we expect from countries all around the world. There aren't a special set of rules that we set forward yesterday for Iran. We simply asked them to behave the way normal, non-belligerent nations behave. That's it. It's simple. We didn't. There's not a special category of people who are permitted to fire missiles into Riyadh. We just asked them to behave like a normal nation.
That's a Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, with a major smackdown there. What demands are you talking about? You mean the ones like we said don't kill Americans and take our citizens hostage and don't fire missiles over our allies? But that's the media doing its job today. Because after all, if President Trump did it, I mean, if he terminated the deal, then it's obviously wrong. And if Mike Pompeo comes out and says, look, if you do this, this, and this, then we'll do this, this, and this. Well, but that's too strict. Which part of it's too strict? The part about not allowing them to be terrorists or to sponsor terrorism? Now, you contrast this with, you've got the other ongoing negotiations, or at least, I know they're still up in the air right now, whether or not the president's going to meet with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. But there was an exchange the other day about this particular meeting. And, well, if he denuclearizes, will you guarantee his safety? And here's how the president responded to that, clip three.
We will guarantee his safety. And we've talked about that from the beginning. He will be safe. He will be happy. His country will be rich. His country will be hardworking and very prosperous.
Right. So if you denuclearize, then this is going to be good for you. It's going to be good for your people. You're going to grow in prosperity. You're going to be happy. You get rid of your nuclear weapons, and we can bring some peace and safety to the region, to the peninsula. Well, here comes the media out to protect you, they say. Here's what they ask of the White House press secretary yesterday. I believe this was actually Tuesday. Here's clip four.
Why would the U.S. guarantee the safety of a dictator whose regime is a serial human rights abuser and is responsible for the recent death of an American college student? Why is that the morally right thing to do?
Again, the goal and the purpose of these conversations would be to have complete and total denuclearization of the peninsula, and the president has been upfront about that part of the conversation, and we're going to continue to move forward.
So in this case, the president's demand is complete and total denuclearization of the peninsula. And if he gets that, then he's guaranteeing the safety of the North Korean dictator. And here comes the reporter, all of a sudden, very concerned about the human rights abuses, about the torturing of American citizens. Why would you even say something like that? I mean, is that morally right to do? If President Trump does it, then we're against it. If he's against it, then we're for it. That's mainstream journalism 101 today. That's how you can know where the press position will end off. Just listen a little bit to the president's agenda or his policy positions or the positions that he takes. That's not to say or to suggest that everything he's doing or deciding is absolutely right, but it's just so predictable. If he's for it, they're against it. And if he's against it, they are for it. Herbert Armstrong, he had an article back in The Plain Truth, 1974. Sam found this morning. But this was, I mean, the big controversy at that time, Watergate, President Nixon, his coming resignation. It says here in the February 1974 Plain Truth, this is Mr. Armstrong writing, in the United States we have had Watergate. And he writes, almost the entire news media have done everything in their power to put President Richard Nixon out of the presidency. So leave aside what happened or what he did do or what he didn't do. But throughout that investigation, as Mr. Armstrong brings out, almost the entire news media have done everything in their power to put President Nixon out of the presidency. He says they have tried him without a scrap of actual proof, but with every possible question and inference of guilt. They have influenced many millions. They have featured with great emphasis every possible question as to doubts and every opinion as to alleged presidential guilt, while minimizing, back on page 17 or page 33, every item in the president's favor. That's the way that it works. If it makes a more conservative leader or president look good, well, then you bury it. You bury it on page 33, or you don't cover it at all. If it makes him look bad, well, then we have it on page 1 above the fold with a supersized font. This is a scandal of the highest order. Mr. Armstrong said in that same piece, the same thing happened to President Abraham Lincoln. It was after his assassination that he came to be acknowledged as one of America's greatest presidents. I can't here express any opinion one way or other as to Mr. Nixon's innocence or guilt, further than to say it is supposed to be American custom in common decency to consider a man innocent until proven guilty. And maybe, yes, just maybe, history will record the picture somewhat like it did in the case of President Lincoln. That's Herbert Armstrong with some hard-hitting commentary aimed at the media. Back in 1974, the entire news media working together to take down a president, a sitting president of the United States. Now, you fast forward to today, it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Now, I'm not old enough to remember how it went down in the early 1970s. And, of course, they didn't have, you know, social media and the internet and those kinds of things back then. But the big news networks, the big newspapers, they were all in it together. They had the same position. And you see much the same today. Now, in some ways, the advances in technology, it does give voice to more conservative sites, to sites that are reporting facts and the truth, that are concerned about the truth and upholding the law and the Constitution. But there's no question, it's 91%. That's what the studies have shown. 91% of the coverage, anything having to do with President Trump, is negative. 91% of it. Now, if you go back 20 years to when, and there was a clip at Drudge Report yesterday referring to this Newsbusters piece, and I think it goes on for 4 or 5 minutes. I'll just play a couple minutes of it, but 20 years ago, when Ken Starr was investigating the Clinton family, he was the evil villain, and the Clintons were to be exonerated on every point. This is just a sampling of the way it was covered 20 years ago. This is put out by Newsbusters, clip 5.
There is growing controversy tonight about whether the newly named independent counsel in the Whitewater case is independent or a Republican partisan allied with the Get Clinton movement.
What the judge said, Peter, plays directly into what the White House's allies have been saying, that this is an overzealous prosecutor overreaching in a bid to bring down the president.
By pandering to Clinton haters, Mr. Starr appears to be abandoning all pretenses of impartiality. He went into this job with a reputation as a fair-minded conservative. He now looks more like a political hitman, desperately eager for a future Supreme Court appointment.
If Ken Starr is a credible prosecutor, he will bring this to a conclusion, right, and the Clintons will be exonerated.
Well, if he doesn't come forward very soon with credible evidence of law-breaking, he will go down in history as the peeping Tom prosecutor.
I'm going to call any witness I can to prove that Ken Starr is a partisan zealot who has had a chip on his shoulder.
Have you any doubt that Kenneth Starr and his deputies are pursuing an agenda that is purely political?
Let's not pretend for a moment that the Starr report is a balanced, judicious presentation. It's not. It is a partisan prosecutor with some zealous aides who's trying to make a case against a guy he despises.
Couldn't this be just a witch hunt? Couldn't the Democrats who've been, and President Clinton's people who've been defending him all these months, be right?
Would not there be some sort of comparison to a persecutor as opposed to a prosecutor for Mr. Starr?
Ken Starr's like a deer caught in the headlights. He's got big bug eyes. He's going to do anything. He's so mad that his neck is going to blow up. This is about vindictiveness. That's what
even on the underlying facts of it, Geraldo,
it's a hate crime. This is a hate crime.
At any point, have you suggested to Judge Starr that it's time to shut the office down or that he may be pressing too hard?
Should Starr resign?
When is this going to be over?
The citizenry want the investigation, the investigator, the experts, and the media to go away.
And that's not even the worst of it. I mean, the last couple minutes, it's just like a toddler throwing a tantrum, name-calling. And like the Newsbusters headline says, I mean, what changed? Here's the same media that just relentlessly abused Ken Starr, and now they practically worship Bob Mueller. I mean, Bob Mueller can do no wrong. Bob Mueller is not to be challenged. Bob Mueller is not to be criticized. You can't investigate the DOJ, not while the DOJ is investigating you. That's what they're saying. Oh, but wait, it's about Russia. That's right. It's not actually, we're not spying on Trump. We're not spying on the Trump White House. Mr. Clapper said yesterday, I played the clip for you, he should actually be thanking us. It's the Russians we're concerned about here. Okay, then. So what's wrong with all these reports about wiretapping and spies, plants, even after everyone in the media, among the Democrats, among the Never Trumpers, among the deep state has said, oh, no, none of that was going on. And then the more and more the details come out, you've got many people in America left to wonder, what is going on? How politicized are these agencies? Relentless abuse. That's what Ken Starr put up with. I mean, he basically, after that, just disappeared. And now there's another investigation, only this one's aimed at a president that everyone in the media, that everyone in the deep state, or at least at the top levels, hates. They hate him. They absolutely despise him. And so you look at so many of the reports and they all blend together, whether they're the late night comedians or the evening news reports or the newspapers or what. And they're all in agreement. President Trump, he's a joke. He's a buffoon. He's a liar. He's a racist. He hates women. They make fun of how dumb he is. Spygate. Why is he saying Spygate? He doesn't even know what Watergate is. There was a fellow, an author on a talk show last night talking about how creepy Mike Pence is. He's like the mean doctor on a soap opera that sells drugs. That's last night. CNN's talking about all the lying that's coming out of the White House and that we're in a time of extreme crisis. Our presidency has been debased, another critic says. He has a bottomless appetite for destruction. Listen to what Chuck Schumer said on the Senate floor just a couple days ago, clip 6.
President's behavior is the kind of grossly autocratic behavior we'd expect in a banana republic, not a mature democracy. By now, we should all recognize that President Trump's latest demand is just another example of a relentless campaign to distract from the serious wrongdoing being uncovered by the Russia probe.
He's leading a banana republic. He's a gross autocrat. They're all in it together. They all are unanimous on this point, the Democrats, the deep state, even a large swath of the judicial system, certainly popular culture, and then, of course, the anti-Trump wing of the Republican Party. Here's Schumer, I mentioned a few days ago, Devin Nunes, just how he should win an award for the courage of demanding answers, of demanding documents. We want to know what happened. What was it that triggered the investigation? America has a right to know, because if it wasn't justified from the beginning, what does it say about these past 2 years? Here's what Schumer had to say about Nunes. This is clip 7.
While an investigation is open and active, demands for oversight are tantamount to interference, especially when the folks demanding the information are the most biased, irresponsible actors. A man like Devin Nunes, who I hear privately from my Republican colleagues, they think he's off the deep end. And he's going to get hold of this?
That's one of the leading senators from the Democrat side. Nunes, he's off on the deep end. He's crazy. He's crazy because he's leading a House Intel Committee. He's providing oversight for these arms of the executive branch. I mean, the president, the White House is over the DOJ and the FBI. And these other intel agencies. But no, you can't even question the way they're going about their investigations. You can't even look into whether it's proper or not. Even when you catch them in lies, even when you catch them in one lie after another lie after another lie. I played this clip yesterday. It's worth repeating here, I think, in this context. This was that exchange between the former director of national intelligence, James Clapper. He was on The View yesterday, and of course, he's in home territory there with the panelists, with everyone in the audience, talking about the surveillance program and what he said back in 2013 when he lied under oath before a congressional committee. Here's what he said. This is clip 8.
You know, the president tweeted about you, quote, Clapper is a lying machine who now works for fake news. So a lot of people I know, first of all, what was your reaction to that when you first saw that?
Well, the president's calling me a lying machine. Well, okay. what that stems from is an exchange I had with Senator Wyden 5 years ago in March of 2013 about a surveillance program, and he was asking me about one, and I was thinking about another. So I made a mistake, but I didn't lie, so that's what occasioned...
So what you're referencing, though, is that when you said, when you were talking about James Snowden blowing the whistle on the NSA illegally spying, and in 2013, when you were asked about it, you said no. So that is a lie. And
no,
I think...
isn't a lie. I'm sorry.
Okay.
It isn't a lie. I was thinking about something else.
Well, I played that yesterday. I had to kind of hurry through it because we were wanting to make time for that the Key of David program that we played at the end. But again, if you go back to 2013, I think his testimony was in March, and then the Snowden revelation came out in early summer. And then just a few weeks after that, he went on a news program. Again, he had been revealed as a liar. He had lied. And Senator Wyden, by the way, he's a Democrat who gave Mr. Clapper the question in advance. You remember the exchange, you know, does the U.S. spy on American citizens? Do they gather intel or do they gather this metadata, whatever it was? He gave him the question in advance. Mr. Clapper said, no, we don't, not wittingly. And then he went on after the investigation. Mr. Wyden gave him an opportunity to amend his testimony. And he didn't. And then a few months later, we find out, oh, they actually are spying on American citizens. Then he gets on a national news network and says, well, I basically, what I answered there, it was the most truthful or the least untruthful response. That's the way that he justified it. And now, this week, as you just heard there, he says, it wasn't a lie. I was thinking about something else. And that, if you look at the entire way this investigation has unfolded, the counterintelligence investigation that undoubtedly started in March of 2016, and that carried right through to the early months of the Trump presidency. And then you have the Bob Mueller investigation that got kicked off a year ago. That's been going on now for a year as well. And all of these movements behind it, the Democrats, the media, the popular culture, all of them, the deep state, it's operating basically like this. Even when the lies are exposed, even when they're exposed, the reasoning is, and they don't state it exactly like what Clapper just said the other day, but they're basically, they come out and say, well, that's not what it is. It's not a lie. Or I was thinking about something else. A perfect example is the Spygate. The spies, the informants. I mean, if you listen to what the media were saying back when they were letting out the details, look, this is very serious. We're letting out a little bit. We can't give you the name. We can't give you what he was doing because, I mean, this was, if we do that, it could endanger him. That's how serious this is. If we do that, there could be other informants that don't come forward with intelligence because they might think, well, you're going to reveal me. So make sure that you don't reveal this. Well, of course, inevitably, you find out the details. He's a Cambridge professor. He's been working with the intelligence community for decades. And now, of course, you have the Trump administration up in arms saying, spies? I mean, you are surveilling. Is that not enough? Now you've got these informants. You've got these spies in my camp. And then here comes the new narrative. Spies? They're not spies. They're just gathering intelligence. It's done all the time. I mean, this happens all the time. That's what Mr. Clapper said earlier this week as well. The ever-changing narrative. This is the way that the investigation unfolds. It's like Mr. Armstrong said back in 1974. The whole of them, all of them, together, the entire news media, They're doing everything in their power to put down or to knock out a president. That's the aim. So whatever position he takes, if it's to talk to North Korea, he's wrong. That's morally unacceptable. To pull out of the Iran nuclear deal, that's wrong. That's wrong. That's too hard. Too many demands there. Mr. Clapper, in that exchange with the View panel, I think I might have played this one for you yesterday as well, but this is what he said with respect to the dossier. Well, I guess we can skip this one. Remember, he said that there was nothing secret about it, and then the View gals all defended him, saying it wasn't really a leak because the dossier had been out there. It was unclassified. But like I pointed out yesterday, what was classified was the briefing with the president. And the news media, specifically CNN, they were waiting for a news hook. They were waiting for Clapper and the others to report to them that he had been briefed, the president-elect. That happened on January 6th last year. And so then CNN, 4 days later, they took it and ran with it. And Andy McCabe, the second in charge at the FBI, right in the middle of that, the briefing on the 6th and the CNN report on the 10th, he emails all of his friends in the DOJ and the FBI right there on January the 8th saying, it's coming. CNN's going to unload on the president. The flood is coming. That's the way that he put it. Well, speaking of flip-flops, just to dwell on the Steele dossier for a second, let me just play you one clip I didn't have time for yesterday. This is in that interview that James Clapper had with the View panel. Here's clip 10.
We did not use it as a source for our intelligence community assessment. I felt, in the no good deed goes unpunished department, that the president-elect at least needed to know it was out there. And that was the whole point of the briefing. At one point, Jim and I were both going to do it, and at the last moment, he said, I think it'd be better if I do it alone. And of course, I was fine with that. And so he stayed after the broader briefing to tell him that. So the point was to warn him, and we didn't draw on it for our official assessment. And because we couldn't validate the second, third order assets or collection sources, informants that were used in the dossier.
So the dossier is not necessarily a leak.
No,
it's not classified.
It's not classified.
If I hand it a newspaper, am I leaking the newspaper to
you? Not in my mind.
Okay, that last bit I've already addressed. The leak was the briefing. But go back before that. He points out that, look, all we wanted to do here was to inform the president. The point was to warn him. He needed to know that it was out there. Now, we didn't use it as a source for our intelligence assessment. They had used it to get the FISA warrants. That's been made clear in the Nunes memo. That's what they relied upon. Andy McCabe testified to that. We didn't have any other evidence really to go on to convince a judge to give us a warrant to surveil Carter Page and who knows who else. And so they relied upon the Steele dossier. Well, then time goes by and more details come out, and we come to find out they relied on the Steele dossier when everything in there is unverified and untrue. So then the narrative begins to shift. Steele dossier, wait a second, we didn't rely on that. It was George Papadopoulos. It was Carter Page. It was, well, you plug in the blank. And you heard a bit of it there yesterday or Tuesday in that same exchange there between Clapper and the gals. We were just trying to help the president. He just needed to know that it was out there, but we didn't rely on it. I mean, it was unverified. We didn't use it. Well, they did use it. And now they're trying to spin it that it wasn't really central. James Comey and some of the others, they're out there saying, well, it was the Steele dossier. That was a small part of it. But, you know, there's Papadopoulos, there's Carter Page. I mean, we have been watching these people for quite some time. Even when exposed, they just come out with, well, it wasn't a lie. I was thinking about something else. You had spies in the... Spies? They're calling that a conspiracy theory now. Because it's not a spy operation. To pay someone hundreds of thousands of dollars to try to get information or to plant information in a Trump campaign advisor. If that's not spying, I mean, well, what is it? So they changed the language, they changed the terminology, whatever. But they were spying. They were surveilling. They were surveilling multiple people. And I played that montage for you, I believe, yesterday. All the crying and whining back in March of last year when President Trump said the phones were wiretapped. In my administration. And they said, wiretap? What kind of conspiracy theory is that? So then when Jake Tapper said yesterday that this business about spies in my campaign, when he says that's a conspiracy theory, well, how much longer before we have another montage? Well, they've already, in so many words, they've already admitted there were spies. Last week, it was very sensitive. We can't get that information out there because it's dangerous. Now it's like, spies? I mean, we have informants all over the place. This is not unusual. Nothing to worry about here. He should be thanking us. Listen to this quote from President Obama. This is something he said back in 2013. This one of the shows on Fox, I believe, last night tracked this down. Here's clip 11.
What I can say with confidence is that when it comes to our domestic operations, the concerns that people have back home in the United States of America, that we do not surveil the American people or persons within the United States, that there are a lot of checks and balances in place designed to avoid a surveillance state.
We don't do it. I can say that with confidence, the president said in 2013. Americans were beginning to wonder, all this metadata being collected, AP reporters being spied on, James Rosen, Cheryl Atkinson. They were beginning to wonder, how many of us are being spied on? Well, there's the president, the former president. I can say with confidence, it doesn't happen. We do not surveil the American people or persons within the United States. And that's what they were saying last year. That's what they were saying as recently as last year. And now it's been, well, I was going to say fully revealed. I'm not so sure. They were listening to Mike Flynn. They were listening to Carter Page. They were listening to this. How many? And how many were unmasked? Well, that was a bigger story months ago as well. It's pretty amazing. The facts are revealed. And then, well, yeah, that did go on, but you have to understand. I mean, a FISA court wouldn't allow for a warrant to surveil someone unless this was really, 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 really serious. So we're just trying to protect America. Okay, well, what about that FISA warrant? Now, you used the Steele dossier. No. No, we used a lot of other evidence. This was serious. And no judge would have approved of it if there wasn't some serious, serious criminal wrongdoing here. Okay, what about the criminal wrongdoing? Where is the Russian collusion? Where are the Russians? Where are the Russians? If all of this is meant to get to the Russians, all that you've mentioned are a few Facebook operators in Russia that are never going to see an American court. It's pretty amazing. You go back to what Mr. Armstrong said. This was in 1970. In fact, you can go back earlier than 1974. We've been studying through it in Manchester's biography on Winston Churchill. I mean, in 1937 and 1938, he was going up against the entirety of the media government establishment. A lone voice in the wilderness trying to get the truth out there. Trying to broadcast the truth. Well, there were some sources that he relied upon. He was a prolific writer and writing a lot in the late 1930s, and submitting to those publications that would accept his work. Quite a few, though, didn't. The BBC shut him out. The Times shut him out. The big ones. I mean, the real big names in media. I read just the other night. If I can pull this book up here. This was after this was his boa constrictor speech. This was after Hitler devoured Austria. And as soon as, I mean, they had already marched into the Rhineland. And then they go in, if you know some of the history there, I forget the leader of Austria at the time, but he was standing up to Hitler, to his credit. And then he called for a referendum. He wanted to let the people of Austria, he wanted to let them have their voice. You know, do you want Germany to just grab hold of us and take control? Or do you want to retain independence? And Hitler knew. He knew what the majority of the people in Austria would say. But he didn't want for the world to know that a majority wanted to retain their independence. All that he wanted the world to see, all that he wanted the Western media to see, was the 20 or 30%, the Nazis, in other words, that were out in front of the cameras, getting all of the attention. And so Hitler waltzes in there right before the referendum. He's not going to let the referendum go through. He just takes right over. And then all that the precious, precious news media, all that they see is, well, I mean, the Austrians look like they're celebrating. I guess they welcome this. Never mind the torture. Never mind the people that were gunned down. Never mind the Jews that were persecuted. That's the Western media. They were all on board with appeasement. All of them. And then here comes Churchill with the boa constrictor speech in March of 1938. He says, look, after a boa constrictor has devoured its prey, it often has a considerable digestive spell. Okay, there might be a little bit of a lull here, but don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by this. Look at the fruits. Look at what's happening. Czechoslovakia's next. And then Chamberlain comes along and says, yeah, but it's probably just the Sudetenland. And then those at the Times and other news media sources, they say, you know what? Czechoslovakia, they really should come to some kind of an agreement with Herr Hitler. He's not that bad of a leader. They need to negotiate some kind of peace that will make the Germans in the Sudetenland happy and the rest of the Czechs happy as well. It can work out. There's nothing to be alarmed about here. Churchill said, now is the time, at last, to rouse the nation. We should lay aside every hindrance and endeavor by uniting the whole force and spirit of our people to raise again a great British nation standing up before all the world. For such a nation, rising in its ancient vigor, can even at this hour save civilization. We need to rouse from sleep. We need to save not just England, we need to save the world from this Nazi menace. It was a courageous speech. And the next day, the Times of London, well, they reported, they talked about Chamberlain's ideas, negotiating some kind of deal with Czechoslovakia. And they didn't even mention Churchill's speech. It, as far as they were concerned, it didn't even happen. And as it happens, Churchill, he had accurately predicted that in the same speech. He said, now after Austria has been struck down, we're all disturbed and alarmed. But in a little while, there may be another pause. And then people will be saying, see how the alarmists have been confuted? Europe has calmed down. It has all blown over. And the war scare has passed away. The Prime Minister will perhaps repeat what he said a few weeks ago, that the tension in Europe is greatly relaxed. The Times will write a leading article to say how silly those people look who, on the morrow of the Austrian incorporation, raised a clamor for exceptional action in foreign policy and home defense, and how wise the government were not to let themselves be carried away by this passing incident. He got it exactly right. See, he knew they were all in it together. We need to be roused from sleep and know the truth. Manchester brings this out in his book. Again, this is in an age where you didn't have the internet. I mean, you just had the newspapers, and most of them were liberal. Most of them were left-wing. Most of them were in cahoots with the appeasers. But even still, Manchester said, the people of Britain could have known the truth if they wanted it. If they really wanted it. But that's just it. They didn't, it's hard to argue too with the fact that so many in Britain, they didn't want to see another World War I massacre. 10 million boys dying in the trenches. That was fresh on the minds of a lot of people. Just something like, 20 years earlier. But the point that Manchester brings out is that the majority, chose to ignore the truth. Confronted with the prospect of another world war, they sought refuge in escapism. They refused to know the truth. And the thing of it is, the truth, only the truth is what sets us free, like Jesus said in John 8. 2 Peter 3, let me just read a few verses for you in conclusion here. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 3, it says, Knowing this first, that there shall come in the last days scoffers, walking after their own lusts, and saying, where's the promise of his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep, all things continue as they were from the beginning of creation. It says in verse 5, For this they are willingly ignorant of, that by the word of God the heavens were of old, and the earth standing out of the water and in the water. See, if you want to forget about reality, well, there's no telling how many distractions and entertainments and trivial pursuits we can get involved in. But if you want to know the truth, and I have to say, as bad as the media coverage is en masse, there are a few exceptional sites that really have done a wonderful job of telling the truth of what's happened in those final years of the Obama administration and what's happening now. This is hardly a perfect presidency. Far from it. But what's happening and what has happened, you heard yourself from President Obama. We don't do this. I can say it with confidence. And they were doing it at home and abroad. So many different abuses of power, whether it was with spying on, the leader of Israel, or tampering with his campaign, or Angela Merkel in Germany, or, as I say, the press reporters, or prosecuting journalists for leaks. I mean, when the shoe is on the other foot, they can come down awfully hard. And that's what they're aiming to do here with their opponents on the other side. They see the Trump administration and anyone who could say anything positive about that administration, they see them, first and foremost, as the enemy. The enemy, after that speech. If I can find the page, after that speech, the boa constrictor speech in the House of Commons, as I said, the Times of London, it basically gave a platform to what Chamberlain had said, and then just acted like Churchill didn't even speak. And it says here, this is in volume 2, of Manchester's book on Churchill. The morning after his dire warning to the House, Churchill received an unexpected, dismaying, and most unwelcome letter from the editor of Beaverbrook's Evening Standard. This is a publication that Churchill wrote for. He received this letter from Beaverbrook terminating his contract, in effect firing him. Thus ended 2 years of fortnightly columns, depriving him of his most valuable public rostrum, because the editor wrote, "It has been evident that your views on foreign affairs and the part this country should play are entirely opposed to those held by us." Churchill, for so many at that time, 1938, as late as 1938, for so many in Britain, for so many in the media, for so many in government, Churchill was the enemy. Churchill was the enemy. Hitler was one that they wanted to cozy up to, that they wanted to appease. Well, as it turns out, Churchill was the only one with the courage to speak the truth. To speak the truth. You can know the truth. Just like Manchester says, if you're willing to go find it and to believe it, to believe God's truth. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we roll through another program without commercial interruption. Wow, where did the time go? If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.